coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome to the big show. Glad you can join us this afternoon here on the Dory Monson Show. I know, I just took a few days off last week, but we have a holiday weekend here. And so we thought this would be a fantastic opportunity to just share with you, not because we're lazy, but because we love. We thought we'd share with you some of our favorite show segments from the last few days and weeks and have nothing but the best going into the holidays. And I know what you're thinking, but Dory, your three-hour show every single day is the best. And you know what? That is really, really sweet of you to say. And I have trouble arguing with it. But so that's what we're doing. We got a couple extra days off here. So we are going to go through, find some of the segments. And after all the craziness of the last few days, especially, but the last few months, we could also use some later times, too. So throughout the afternoon, we're going to do just that. We're going to provide you some of the more fun segments that we've done. So we got all of that coming up on the big show today. And I will be checking your text messages, and I'll be interacting with you on Twitter if you want to follow me at Dory Monson, DoriMonson. So we can stay in touch throughout the weekend because I kind of miss you already, okay? So sit back, enjoy. We'll have a few best of segments for you here. And if any big thing huge happens, we'll jump right back in live because we're hanging out in town on this holiday weekend. So enjoy our best of. I hope you are going into the holiday weekend with some fun in your plans as well. So check out some of the favorite segments we've had in the recent past here on the Dory Monson Show. Well, he joined us a few months ago when he first made the decision, but now it is upon us. And next week, Steve Rabel is going to sign off after 38 years at Cairo 7 News. He's going to keep doing the Seahawks play-by-play, but we're not going to be around next week. I'm taking a little time off, so if I was going to say a farewell to his TV gig, I had to get Steve Rabel on with us this afternoon. And so Steve Rabel joins us. Hey, Steve, good to talk to you today.
Dory, how are you?
How are you feeling? 38 years of climbing the ladder, and now it's all coming to a close next week. How are you doing with that?
Yeah, you kind of make it sound like the building is falling down around me. It's, you know, I mean, it's as I've told a lot of people, I'm just retiring. They're not going to lay me to rest. At least I hope not. I'm actually really, really good with it. Sharon and I talked about retiring literally 5 years ago. And but for the 2008 incident with the economy, we might have. But then, we figured, well, maybe we better hang in there a few more years and just to make sure we're kind of on solid ground. And this just seemed like the right time. I mean, I just turned 66, and I've been doing this a long time. And as you know, you're much more savvy about high tech than I am. You're with it when it comes to virtual and digital and all that. I'm truly not. And that doesn't speak to anything bad about where we're heading in this or where we already are. It speaks to me being a moron. So, and that's okay. I'm good with that. I can make my cell phone work as a phone and a camera. I'm okay with that.
Right.
I'm good. I'll keep doing Seahawks football, and I hope they'll let me keep doing that for years, and that you and I will be able to come together pregame and postgame for many more years. But we've got some trying times to get past here. Sure. In the next 6 months or a year.
I guess the reason I phrased it, and I've told you this many, many, many times, that I really admire your career. I mean, you played for the Seahawks for 6 years, but even while you were playing, you started laying the ground for the broadcasting career. Then you start doing sports, and you know, and I can relate to that as well. And then you said, no, I have some broader aspirations. Not that there was anything wrong with just doing sports, but you just had broader aspirations. But, I mean, you had to replace Wayne Cody doing sports, which is, you know, some of the biggest shoes in Seattle television history.
Not to mention the trousers. And he would laugh at that. That's the only reason I said it, because Wayne would laugh too.
But I mean, so you do that, and then you have broader aspirations, and you become the main news guy. And what I've discovered, Steve, is that the climb is the great joy, that as you achieve these, you know, these goals that you've set, there's nothing more fun than that. And then once you reach whatever destination you aspire to, you don't have those challenges of climbing the mountain anymore. And I guess I'm just speaking for myself. I miss that. Do you?
Yeah.
Do you miss that?
Yeah, I think I do a little bit. You know, but the flip side of that is the older you get, and it's not that you get lazy, but I mean, you know, time takes its toll, and you know, it's tougher to get going every day, and I know that, and Sharon knows this about me, especially in preseason when we're first getting started or the first game of the season, I'm beat after a game. I used to be able to do a game and then go right to work early on Monday and work all week and then jump on the plane and fly with the team. And, you know, it's not breaking rocks, but there's a lot of energy used there.
Sure.
And so I find that part of it gets a little more difficult the older you get. And yes, you're right. That climb, that what it took to get to this point, you know, we've had a lot of kind of looking back sorts of things, and people are working on at the station and stories and all those things. And you know, I'm seeing some still shots from stories I've done in the past, and it just reminds me of all the great opportunities. And, you know, if I had said no to going to Albania back in, 1999 or something, when the Kosovo crisis was happening, I would never have had an opportunity to report, on that, you know, one of the most awful things to happen in our lifetimes, and right in the heart of Europe. And so to be there as watching that and documenting that part of history. And I think it's those kinds of things you know, when you get the opportunity to do them and you take them, and that is one of the things that makes this job most interesting and most exciting. And then once you get there and you're sitting on the desk every day, you don't have those kind of opportunities quite so much. I had a general manager a number of years ago who said, you know, the viewers like to see you sitting behind that desk. That's where you're most familiar to them. And I said, well, that's great. I worked hard to get here, but I also like getting out from behind the desk once in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know that next Thursday they're doing a 30-minute special retrospective on your 38 years there.
It's 26 minutes commercials and 2.5 minutes of programming, I think.
Nice, okay. What are the stories that...
I have no idea. You mean what...
For
my
you personally. Yeah, most indelible
okay.
For you.
Yeah, well, and you know, I've done a couple of newspaper or a couple of interviews for articles in recent days, and this one it slipped past me because, you know, there's been a lot of water under that bridge. But that very trip, going to document the Kosovo crisis in Albania, and I remember my photographer Scott Kruger and I slept on a floor in a house that was reserved for some doctors who were going over from medical teams here in the Northwest to help volunteer in the refugee camps. And I'll never forget this story. We're documenting in a refugee camp, and there are thousands and thousands of these refugees who had come out of Kosovo and were, you know, being forced out or killed if they didn't leave, and into Albania. And so this was an Italian group of rescue folks who had set up this camp, and there was a kind of, you know, a line where everybody passes things off of a truck and into a big tent storage area. There was a line of these folks, and they were all Italian, and they were singing. And so I walked over to one, and he didn't understand what I was saying. I walked over to another, and he spoke very broken English. And I said, "What are you singing?" And he told me, and I said, "Well, why are you singing? These are pretty dire circumstances." And he said, "We sing so we don't cry." And that stayed with me forever.
Yeah.
We sing so we don't cry. And we could say that about so much in our lives today. And so those kinds of things, that kind of story really made its mark on me. The Pang Warehouse fire, I reported the night after four firefighters lost their lives down in the International District, and how solemn it was. Those kinds of big stories. I remember 9/11. We were sitting on the desk. You know, network would take like 40 minutes or 45 minutes, and the local stations would take 15.
Right.
And so you're constantly in that news loop for an 8-hour period sitting on the desk, or any of the breaking news stories that we've had, the earthquakes and WTO riots. And there are just so many of those stories. And then there are good stories too, the Super Bowl championship and the, and those kinds of things, all were just great stories. I've interviewed presidents. I've covered presidential elections and Olympics and all the rest. So you have those uplifting or those promising and positive stories as well.
Well, it's a pretty good run. And the fact that you're going to be able to still continue to do one of your passions, the Seahawks, for years and years to come, that's pretty cool, too. That's not a bad little run you've had there, Rabel.
Well, and you know, I really have been lucky, and you've heard me say this before. I've been blessed, and not only being in the same city for almost 45 years now, two employers, Cairo and the Seahawks, got married 39 years ago next week. And so that's been a blessing. And, you know, I can't imagine all that Sharon has had to put up with the travel and how many days and nights and all the long weekends. And then, you know, for how many years I did the 11 o'clock news. So always getting back at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
It's been, you know, pretty tough for her. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate, you know, her strength through all this. So all those things have been a real plus for me. But the opportunities I've been given, you mentioned it first about Wayne, and let's put Pete in that category too, Pete Gross, the first voice of the Seahawks. Those guys gave me opportunities. They gave me chances to kind of see if I had some skills and then maybe hone those skills. And the same was true on television. And every step of the way, from PM Magazine to sports to the noon news to finally the main evening broadcast, news directors and general managers have given me an opportunity, and I've been lucky enough and blessed to work with so many good people that they've helped me along the way, and that's why I get a chance to retire now and say it's been a great run, and let's leave it to somebody now who's got more hair and a deeper voice and is about 35 years younger, and
that's right.
And you know, the place is in great hands. Cairo's in great hands with Monique and Dave and Jesse and all the guys down there. So I'm certainly not concerned about Cairo. They're going to be fine.
Well, it's, as you know, I greatly admire what you've built for you know, yourself professionally and personally. And the marriage, I mean, today's my 33rd wedding anniversary.
Hey, so way to go. Congratulations.
You know how important that is. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
yes.
I just wanted to say congratulations, not being able to do it when you finally say farewell on TV next week. But I will look forward to finally seeing you again on football season. Hopefully things will get going there pretty soon.
Yeah, as do I, Dory. And that it's always a great time of year. And it would be nice to be able to sort of, you know, break through what we've been going through for the last several months with coronavirus. But we can today celebrate Juneteenth with all of our friends and our teammates and coworkers and family and then just, you know, have a great weekend and next week we get up and we do it all again. And I just appreciate you and appreciate you having me on and happy to join you.
It's my pleasure. All right. Well, congrats on a 38-year television career, and here's to many more with the Seahawks. And I'll see you sometime soon.
You got it. Thanks, Dory.
Okay. Steve Rabel, who next week is hanging up the lavalier. Seven. Bunsen Show rolls on. Hey, glad you're hanging out with us this afternoon here on the Dory Monson Show. And it is a holiday weekend, so we couldn't just, you know, leave you high and dry. So Nicole just spent hours upon hours picking out a lot of our favorite segments or more fun segments, stuff that we thought you would love to hear again. So we're going to be sprinkling those in throughout the afternoon here. So thanks for tuning in with us. Be safe this weekend and enjoy some of our favorites, well, some of Nicole's favorite segments in the recent past here on the Dory Monson Show. Once again, I-5 shut down both directions because a bunch of anarchists are walking on the freeway on I-5. And the Washington State Patrol issued a statement over the weekend, and they said, yeah, cars and people don't mix. And as long as the protesters, I'm so sick of them being called protesters. You're not protesting anything when you walk on I-5 and shut down the freeway. All you're doing is exhibiting the petulance of a child with no stated purpose. I mean, is there anybody who thinks that something productive is going to come out of people walking on I-5 every single night? And they've been doing it for way more than a week now. And so they shut down I-5 north and southbound, both directions, every on and off ramp. And they tell people who are driving down I-5, oh, you can take a detour route. You can go across the 520 bridge and down 405 and then come back across I-90. But they still have tolls on the 520 bridge. And I'm thinking, what a racket. So you allow a bunch of anarchists to shut down your freeway every night. And then you tell people the solution is, hey, drive on this toll road that we have so we can collect some money out of it. It's ridiculous. And then I tweeted that last week while on vacation, on my underpants vacation. And Mike Lindblom at the Seattle Times, their great transportation reporter, he said, well, you could go over to 99 and go through the tunnel, and that's a cheaper toll than 520. But either way, I mean, they're making money off of letting people shut down the freeways. But it reminded me vividly of a story from, oh gosh, I think it was 1985. I'm 23 years old, and my now wife, then my girlfriend of 2 years, and you know, I grew up, I didn't do anything as a kid. I didn't see any part of any of the country. We never had flown any place when I was a kid. And all of a sudden, I have this beautiful girlfriend, and I'm starting to think about a life beyond what, you know, I'd grown up, which was just very, you know, I was in Ballard, and I didn't get out much, you know. So there was a deal that you could fly to Florida for, I want to say it was $99, but you had to get the version, the 80s version of the barcode off a bunch of rolls of paper towels and toilet paper and some company. If you sent in enough UPC codes or whatever they were called, you could get $99 airfare to Florida. And so we started buying all these paper towels and toilet paper and stuff and saving these codes because we had no money, none. I'm making $6 an hour. But we we flew into Orlando, I really wanted to rent a convertible. This was right kind of at the height of Miami Vice. And so I had to have a convertible. Now, I didn't have one like Sonny Crockett's, whatever he drove. What was that black car? Would you check, Nicole, and see what black car Sonny Crockett drove in Miami Vice? I don't think it was a really beautiful convertible, though. It was my dream car at the time. But I got a Chrysler LeBaron convertible. But we flew into Orlando because that was the cheapest. And then we wanted to drive down to Miami the first night, about a four-hour drive down the Florida Turnpike. What you got for me, Nicole?
Well, this one says Ferrari Daytona Spider.
It was a spider.
That's not right?
And then they blew up the car after season two or three, and then he got a hard top white sports car that I hated. But the black convertible, that was, oh, man, driving to the crime scene with Phil Collins in the air tonight playing. Whew. Okay, so my only image of Florida, by the way, is Miami Vice. It's nothing but, drug kingpins and guns and criminals. So we fly into Orlando. And we start driving down the Florida Turnpike, 4 hours to Miami. We got in at 10 p.m., so we're going to get into Miami at 2 a.m. And I've got the top back, and we got the radio playing. And the song of that spring would play. They played it once an hour. And in 1985, it was AM radio. And they played the top 40 songs, but they'd have news at the top of the hour. But it seemed like, you know, we heard the song three or four times in a four-hour drive. So I'm feeling like Sonny Crockett, okay? The top's back, it's warm out, blackness on both sides of the Florida Turnpike because it goes right through a swamp for hundreds of miles. And I'm listening to Tears for Fears, and I'm feeling good. Then they go to the top of the hour news, and they announce, I'm not making this up. I tried to find a news story last night. If you have any doubts, my wife will verify every word of the story. There were Cuban gangs that had started jumping out in front of cars, and they would particularly try to go after, in the Orlando area, the Miami area, touristy areas. And if it was something they could identify as a rental car, it's an even more prime target. And they would jump out in front of cars, make the driver slam on the brakes, and then other guys would run out from wherever they were hiding, and they'd smash the windows, and they'd steal everything that was in the car. And in many cases, they hijacked or carjacked the vehicle. And so the top of the hour, we hear this story, and I'm thinking, whoa, am I in a like real life video game now? Is somebody going to jump out in front of my car? And then what? Do I slam on the brakes? So that was the 10 p.m. news. And then at 11 p.m., it's the lead story again. This rash of violence of people jumping in front of cars. And then at about 11:30, they did a half hour news also. The governor of Florida came out that night and said, this crime has happened so often that if somebody jumps in front of your car, go ahead and hit them, and you won't be prosecuted, because we've just seen so many innocent people who have been victimized by really violent crime because of this. And so now I'm really thinking somebody's going to jump out in front of my car, and I got to make the decision. Am I going to plow them down if they do that? The governor says it's okay. And, you know, we get off in Miami, or we actually were staying in St. Pete. No, Fort Lauderdale is with Miami. And but we're on surface streets now. And I'm just wondering if somebody's going to jump out in front. And Tears for Fears is playing. It's 82 degrees at 1, 2 in the morning. Bring the music up, Sean. Hey, wait a second. My wife's just walking in. Honey, I know you're on the phone. My wife's just walking in. Just yell out for my listeners. It's true that the governor of Florida, when we went down in 1985, said if somebody jumps out in front of your car, just hit them, right? That's a true story.
On Alligator Alley, just hit him with your car.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, it was the Florida Turnpike, huh? Yeah, Alligator Alley went across to Sanibel Island. We took that, too. But the Florida Turnpike the night we flew into Orlando, yeah. I'm sorry you had to hear that discord between me and my wife there. So anyway... I'm not saying that's what the Washington State Patrol should do, but we were in Florida for 10 days, and the criminals stopped jumping in front of cars once the governor issued that proclamation. Again, I am not advocating for that. I'm not suggesting we do that in Washington. I'm just saying there are ways we could handle this. Besides shutting down the freeway every night. Okay, got a lot more stories in the news to get to. Stop these ridiculous I-5 shutdowns. That's my real point. Okay, lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Okay, I asked this question because we've already seen years ago King County, which was named for in 1850s, U.S. Vice President Rufus King. We changed the name about 15, 20 years ago to Martin Luther King County. And since we're seeing the cancel culture in full bloom around the country, statues of Washington being torn down. I told you about the one in Portland. If you haven't seen the video of it, you really need to. They soaked an American flag in gasoline or something. And then they climb up the statue of George Washington, wrap it around General Washington's, the father of our country. Oh, I'm sorry. That's gender specific. They wrap the doused American flag around his head, light it aflame. And then while the burning American flag is sitting on top of the statue, they had, I don't know if they were ropes or chains, but these, you know, militant vandal criminals, they pull over the statue and then cheer and celebrate. And then they took the loop on their fly and then they urinated on the statue as it laid on the ground. I know that it's coming for our state. It is. And so we're going to see it. So we've been getting lots of suggestions from our listeners, because obviously we have to change the name of our state. Lots of good suggestions. We'll now be Booker T. Washington State. Booker T. Washington, American educator, author, orator. Also, there was George Washington.
Wait. Huh. Yes. So if we go with that, then would the gorge have to be called the Gorge at Booker?
Oh, it's the Gorge at George, isn't it?
Because it's George Washington. So we'd have to change the name of a couple.
Oh, yeah, we got to get rid of George's, too.
Doesn't
absolutely
flow the same.
Yeah. Well, what else? The bluffs at Booker. Because there are bluffs there that overlook the Columbia, right?
Okay.
The bluffs at Booker. We'll change the name of George Washington to Booker Washington. And then Texter also suggested Denzel
Washington. That's my favorite.
Who doesn't like Denzel Washington? He's one of the greatest American actors. Everybody loves him.
Everybody does.
Universally beloved. The sad thing, of course, is 30, 40 years ago, George Washington was universally beloved. And I could go on and say, who doesn't love George Washington? Everybody loves him. He's the general that fought the British, helped establish the greatest country in the history of mankind. He was our first president. Everybody loves George Washington. Now we're tugging down his statue and urinating on it. So I hope that there's no fall from grace from any of the other Washingtons that we're suggesting here. But we clearly do have to change our state's name. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And then I got one other story. This story is worth playing, you know, once. How often do I play it, Nicole? Once a year, maybe?
At least twice a year. I feel like you find an excuse.
No, I know. You get annoyed when I play it. But it's back in the news today. The single greatest local television news story of all time was produced by K2 in Portland. Oh, man. So a whale had washed up on a beach on the Oregon coast, and they couldn't figure out how to get rid of it. So some genius had the idea, let's put a bunch of dynamite under the whale. And the newsman, the reporter, he is so awesome. And I'm just going to play for you, but you have to hear, when they blow up the whale, they use too much dynamite, and listen to the sound of cascading blubber.
Sand dunes there were covered with spectators and land blubber newsmen, shortly to become land blubber newsmen, with a blast blasted blubber beyond all believable bounds.
You get a wild?
And I should pause for just a second. They thought they were just going to blow it up and it was just going to kind of fall into little pieces that the seagulls would pick up. But instead, like I said, they used way too much dynamite. And huge chunks of whale flew into the sky and started raining down on people, crushing cars. Could have
Our
killed people.
Our cameras stopped rolling immediately after the blast. The humor of the entire situation suddenly gave way to a run for survival as huge chunks of whale blubber fell everywhere. Pieces of meat passed high over our heads while others were falling at our feet. The dunes were rapidly evacuated as spectators escaped both the falling debris and the overwhelming smell. A parked car over a quarter of a mile from the blast site was the target of one large chunk. The passenger compartment literally smashed.
I mean, how awesome is that? That was 1970, K2 television. But yeah, a quarter mile away, a car completely smashed. Anyway, it's in the news again today. It just gives me a reason to play my favorite local news audio of all time, because the newest park on the Oregon coast has just been named Exploding Whale Memorial Park. 50 years after that news story, they asked the public for name suggestions for a new park down there on the coast, and overwhelmingly, and bless their hearts, that is good sense of humor down there. So the newest park on the Oregon State coastline is Exploding Whale State Park, or Memorial Park.
Poor whale didn't even get a name.
Shamu. They're all Shamu.